Fox News Radio.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
Good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. That's KCNR 1460. Welcome to our friends in Redding and Cottonwood, Anderson, Red Bluff, City of Shasta Lake, down to Corning. It's 7:05 on Thursday, July 29th. We're pushing for the end of July. Going to be a great day. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com, and you can write to Linda at Linda@KCNR1460.com. Joined today by Bad Bob.
And good morning.
How you doing there, Bad Bob?
Hanging in there, getting out of the time warp. When you do news, it's like a weird time warp thing because it seems like you got forever to fill, and then you all of a sudden run out, and you got 5 seconds to finish up. It's weird.
Well, you know, the time warp, wasn't that like from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Dancing the Time Warp? Speaking of dancing in through time, here's Linda.
Will I get to see that on your birthday?
You will, because you put your right foot in and you put your left foot in.
The time warp.
Yeah, the time warp. You start, you know, dancing.
In case you're wondering what the weather's going to be like today, it's 65 degrees currently. It's going to be 96. Sunny and hot. You know, I've been loving this weather anyway.
Anything below 100 is great for us.
I have a couple of announcements here. First of all, let's congratulate. There are three winners who won in the RABA, Reading Bus Authority, RABA. They picked their three winners of the Ride and Win promotion. And everyone who rides RABA from July 19th to August 31st, it's morning, receives an entry form from each of the times that they ride, and they're eligible for weekly prizes drawing and a grand prize drawing at the end of the promotion. So the Tracy Palmer won a $20 gift certificate from Luigi's. Michael Crossley won 4 movie passes from Prime 11. And Yvonne Fink won 2 day passes from Waterworks Park. So that's cool. I like these promotions when, you know, they encourage you to ride. It's a good time to do that in the summer, just to get on the bus and I was behind a
RABA. Ride, Sally, ride.
I was behind a RABA bus yesterday, and I thought, you know, the promotion, I know a lot of people poo-pooed, you know, the blue bus, but it was really nice to see how clean it was. It's a nice-looking bus. So congratulations, and encourage you to take the public transportation. Today's Jack Parr Day. Now, who's Jack Parr? He is the original guy from The Tonight Show. In 1954, The Tonight Show. It began as Tonight. Took from Tonight to American After Dark. So in 1957, he began a successful 5-year run, of course, as The Tonight Show, changing its name to The Jack Parr Tonight Show. And he was known, obviously, it's unfortunate because, you know, such a creative man, but he was known for his emotional outbursts and his interviews and that were...
He'd cry on the air. And then he got upset one day and said he quit and walked off.
Jose Melis, his orchestra, stayed with Parr through the years, as did a sidekick and announcer, Hugh Downs. Those who stayed up night after night got used to being entertained by regulars such as Dodie Goodman, Cliff Arquette, Pat Harrington, Hans Fjellnerwen, Joey Bishop, and Florence Henderson.
Those are the ones you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know of them. So, of course, you know, to me, the king of all kings was always Johnny. Yeah.
He set a bar that none of these people have reached.
Johnny Carson, that's right. I mean, he was the king. It's like Dean Martin. I mean, where do you go after that? So... thought I would tell you, too, a couple things that happened on this day. I love this. It is in 1958, you'll love this, the United States Space Agency, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, was authorized by Congress. So NASA.
Okay. That's when they started.
That's right. In 1754, I love how it bounced around here, the first international boxing match was held. Where do you think it was?
Where do I think it was? a barge in New York City.
It was in England.
Oh, okay.
A Jack Slack. I love that. Jack Slack. The champion from Great Britain knocked out the French challenger, Jean Petit. And everyone got home at a decent hour, too. Lasted about 25 minutes.
Oh, so you didn't hit him coming through the ropes. Well, you know, we have a little more information here, too. We got some news right here in River City.
What is it?
Okay.
What do you have over
there?
Well,
you know, we were talking about the number of people that are running for city council. And we were up to 12. And then yesterday, Greg Parrish dropped out saying that he was not going to be able to raise the funds it was going to take to run for office. Well, as soon as he dropped out, Scott McGregor, Tehama County probation counselor, jumped in. He said he knows enough about government to know where to trim the fat, and that he would target the fat and cancer in the city budget rather than targeting pensions, the benefits of which he knows as a public employee. Asked to name specifics, McGregor said he would favor a wage freeze and getting department heads out of the committee meetings and back to work. Well, one more, so that makes 12. Let me see if we can get all their names at one time. Here, Scott McGregor, Patrick Jones, Mayor Patrick Jones, City Council Member Rick Bassetti, Gary Cadd, Steve Hobson, Russell Hunt, Don Kirk, Ken Murray, John Reet, Sue Seychow, Sandra Spear, and Francie Sullivan. And as soon as we find out who's taking their papers out on this in August, I think it's next week, as soon as we find out the ones that are really serious about this, we are inviting every one of the candidates that are running to come on the show, and let's talk about what they want to do for the city.
Yeehaw!
It's going to be a marathon of council members. Hey, we got to take a quick break here. Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. When we come back, we're going to address the immigration bill that almost was. KCNR 1460, clearly news talk radio.
Morning, North State. Hey, a big shout out to our good friend Cameron Middleton from River City, Java. You know how cool it is? Oh, you know, I instead of making coffee in the big old machine in the back there of the station, I thought, oh, you know, I want to go get some good coffee this morning. And right down the street from the station is River City Java. And it was so cool to pull up and see Cameron there and hear the station on. It was really cool. And, you know, I know for some of you, then you have a problem sometimes hearing. We've got these this round antenna, because a lot of times if you have electrical stuff and, you know, it'll cut in and out. So, you know, Cameron, a shout out to you, and thank you so much. And also our good friend Lori, who is in Susanville listening on her iPhone. She says that she's seeing a lot of firefighters and equipment out there. But, you know, we appreciate you always taking us with you where you go on your iPhone. So, you know, hey.
And you can, of course, we stream, and you can get us on iPhone. I believe it's, off of the iTunes. So it's not only on your computer, but also on your iPhone.
You know, be careful. Have a great time.
And, you know, we have something to give away. For people that are with us early, we have a discount pass. And take this discount pass to participating stores in the Shasta Center and receive a 10% discount on your purchases. That's right. It's a Seen on TV store, Cohen & Luke's, All Fired Up, Susie's. Anyway, this is good till it's good through September. So the first caller at 605-4567 gets a discount pass to the Shasta Center. Save 10% when you're over there, whatever you're buying.
That's right. We've got
now, this. Some serious, when we go into the serious things, is you remember, I don't remember if you've been hearing the news about two U.S. sailors disappeared in Afghanistan. It appears that they were driving into town in a Humvee. Who knows the reasons for it? Got in a firefight with the Taliban. One was killed. Then the other one was missing. They found the first sailor and his body. And they're just, you know, combing through Afghanistan along the borders. And unfortunately, the second sailor, Petty Officer Third Class Jarak Newlove from Seattle area, body has been found. It's very unfortunate, but again, it's one of those things that in combat you have to expect. The sailors were instructors at a counterinsurgency school for Afghan security forces, according to the senior military officials who spoke on condition of anonymity. But again, our thoughts and prayers go out to the young warriors and their families over this. Which kind of leads us to something else. It's been in the papers, and it's kind of hard to it's hard to get your arms around that 91,000 documents that were pages of classified material was taken by, it appears, and I don't know if they finally nailed it down, but it appears to be a 22-year-old specialist in the Army, 22 years old, and he figured that he had, because he had a secret access, I'm not sure it's top secret, I think it was just secret, got into all these databases and found ways of downloading them, and then when he did, he sent them in his way of, I guess, protesting. He sent all of this secret material to a place called WikiLeaks. I think they're out of Australia. And WikiLeaks, of course, just had a massive, hugging party. And then they turned it loose on the world. And, of course, you can imagine who jumped into this, but the New York Times, who said they tried to be sensitive about it, tried to ensure that they're, that there were no, nothing released that was going to harm anybody. And as the question was, what about the names of the Afghan tribal chiefs and the Afghan people that were helping our soldiers and our special forces in this fight? Well, we're not sure about that. We're not sure that those names were not released. And what about the fact that it could cause danger? What if 10% of 90,000 documents or 9,000 documents? What if it was only 1% of 900 documents that this guy released? What if that causes harm or death to any of our forces out there? And there's the Wall Street Journal. I'm sorry, the New York Times, right in the middle of it. They're the ones that released the big story about how we were tracking terrorists through their bank accounts and how they were moving money. And, wow, that source of information dried up right then. In the New York Times, well, we have the right to release secret information. It was given to us. And somehow, this has been upheld in court. They have the right to release secret information. I have a real problem with it. Anything that has to do with the movements of troops, anything that has to do with troops in the field, people that they're working with that whose lives depend on anonymity, why is it okay to release this? And if this man is the one that released it, what is his punishment going to be? Is there a way they can put him in jail for, say, 50 years? So when he gets out of jail, he'll be 77 and not let him have a computer while he's in jail? I think they ought to be thinking about that. This is horrendous in the sense that 91,000 pages of classified material gets leaked. And what is the Obama administration doing about it? Well, this is something we don't want. You get one side of it saying, the Pentagon going, this could be a real problem, and Obama going, well, it's not that big a thing. Well, which one is right? If you're releasing names, dates, times, places, I think it becomes a little more serious. But then again, you can't tell which way this administration is going, unless it's got something to do with protecting the immigration and the borders of the state of Arizona. And we'll address that when we get back. Carl in the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Join.
Good morning.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning. It is 7:25 in the morning.
Currently 63 degrees. It's going to be a beautiful day, I think. High today of...
going up to 98.
90, yeah. According to the forecast, it says 96. Calm wind becoming south. Southwest between 7 and 10 miles per hour. Tonight's going to be around 63. This is the great barbecue weather. And we love taking Snooki up to the doggy park later on. in the evening. And by the way, we do have those discount passes to the Shasta Center. You're wondering, where's the Shasta Center? Well, you know, where Kubler's is and that wonderful strip of wonderful stores in there. You've got Candle and Gift Connection, and you have Clyde's, and you've got the Crossroads, As Seen on TV. Really fun little stores. You might want to go check out, especially that Candle Connection, because she's got all kinds of groovy sandals and shoes, and they're like $10, and everything's $20. So, you know, especially times now, if you want to just have that little umph thing to have a great, a fun weekend, and just have that fresh new T-shirt or whatever, go check it out. We've got discount passes for 10%.
We'll give two away.
On your purchases, so...
We'll give two away.
Yeah.
605-4567. And we'll keep bothering you with it until somebody calls and gets it. Okay, immigration. What makes it a country? Part of it is a common language and a border. Well, obviously we're having problems with the border. You know, people wonder, why are you so excited about immigration? Because there are so many problems that are linked to illegal immigration. And part of it just is that I'm just damn tired of it. I mean, aren't you tired of it? People just flowing through the border. They could be anybody, and they are anybody. Guess what? Prayer rugs. Fighting prayer rugs along the border. I do not see many of the natives of Chichilla, Mexico, carrying prayer rugs with them. So somebody else is. So the Susan Bolton, appointed by Mr. Clinton, set up a lengthy legal battle when she struck down parts of the nation's toughest law on immigration. The Republican Governor Jan Brewer said, bumping a road, we're going to appeal the ruling and seek to get the judge order overturned. She delayed parts, but she changed parts that required officers to check a person's immigration status while enforcing other laws. I thought that was already on the books. The judge also delayed parts of the law that required immigrants to carry their papers at all times. I think that's been a law since the 40s, and made it illegal for undocumented workers to solicit unemployment in public places. That's the one where all these people are standing on the corner, right, looking for jobs. Standing on the corner, looking for jobs, and what Arizona said is, hey, look, they're out there blocking traffic. It's illegal. We don't want them to do it. What's wrong with me? Can't you make it a driving policy, something like that, to keep them off the streets? And Bolton says, requiring Arizona law enforcement officials and agencies to determine immigration status of every person who's arrested burdens lawful present aliens. Hello, only thing they're asking is that you carry your ID with you. If I'm pulled over by a policeman, he asks for my ID. Is that right? So he pulls over a person here illegally. Where's your ID? I don't have it. Can you prove that you're here legally? Nope. Well, come on down. And that's what the gist of the law is. They're requiring people that are in this country legally to be able to prove it. We got to take a break here. Call in about Free Fire Radio. We've got people on the line. We'll get to you as soon as these messages are over.
Good morning, Reading. Good morning, North State. Good morning, you know who you are. Going to be a beautiful day today. It is currently 7:34. We're just about ready to start On the Spot with Linda Butt. This is something that we're going to be doing here at 7:30, just to give you a little bit of what's going on around the North State. And by the way, today is going to be high of 96. And the weather's always brought to you by Ensemble Vineyards. Now, this Friday, that's tomorrow night, Rick Hill will be doing wonderful soloing on his guitar. And so if you're going to make reservations, you can always go to KCNR 1460, go to our website, and make some reservations out in Ensemble. They book up really fast. They sell out in where the music is. If you want to hear the music specifically, ask for the music room. Oh, Bob's got it queued up. This is... Yeah, what do you want to do this weekend? That's right. Winona isn't going to be in town. I don't know if she sold out or not, but Friday she is going to be at the Cascade. What a great way to see Winona. I lived in Nashville for 5 years. I had a great opportunity to see a lot of name acts. And Winona, the cool thing about country music at that time, and I'm not sure because I haven't been there in a long while, but you would see, you know, Mama Judd, Ashley Judd, and Winona, and they would just be sitting at the table next to you. And everybody, they didn't have to worry about paparazzi, and didn't really have to worry, you know, just everybody just kind of understood that this is a real musical community. And you saw people on the come up or the rise, if you will, and started. I lived there for 5 years, and you remember when they were playing in clubs, and then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, they were on a hit and they got a deal, and they were opening for Winona or Garth. I mean, I had a couple friends that wrote songs on Garth's albums, and it was just a great time. So Winona Judd, and she is a phenomenal gospel singer, you know. Market Fest is also tonight. Mumblefinger will be the band from 5 to 9. Check that out. And also Club Dead, The Last Resort. I haven't called my friends Lisa and Bill Collins, who've absolutely written this thing from scratch. We're talking, you know, the lyrics, the music, the play. Casting it, directing it. I just love these guys. The tickets are going to be on sale at the Graphic Emporium. They're $15 and $20. Carl and I are going to be giving away tickets, not today, but starting next week. We're going to be doing a little hosting it on the 13th of August, so you'll be listening for that. But it's nice to hear on the street people that have gone to the show and have said, "Have you seen Club Dead yet?" No, we haven't seen it. They said, it is so funny. The props are so good. It's so well written. So, Bill and Lisa, if you're listening, major accolades. I always love to share things that are happening that people say behind your back that are really positive, and then call and share that with you. So many other things going on in town, too. Tonight, if you are tomorrow night for free, Movies in the Park. And that is what they always choose a special benefit every year. And I maybe somebody can give me a call and tell me what the Movies in the Park, what show they're playing. I don't have that, but it is tomorrow night. And if I find that out in the next, in the next segment, I'll make sure that. Other things coming up at the Cascade Theater, you might want to check out A Straight No Chaser. That's coming up September 16th. These guys are an incredible a cappella group of guys. They started out at Indiana University, and I'm not sure if it's the same formation, but they are the hippest thing going on. I mean, these guys, when you hear about a cappella, it's not like barbershop a cappella, even though they have incredible tight harmonies. They're a little like Bobby McFerrin meets, you know, something else. And to think about the 11, 13 guys singing like that, it's phenomenal. Also, the San Francisco Opera is coming up September 26th, and Manhattan Transfer. That's the first show I ever saw at the Cascade Theater. Perfect place to see Manhattan Transfer. The Cascade's a 900-seat theater, so go ahead and check that out. By the way, last night we ate at the Rivers, and we were with some friends who said, sushi for two for four. And we were just having a conversation. We didn't even know they had sushi. Sushi for two for four. So they served the most beautiful sushi platter. It was unbelievable. It was delicious. We sat out on the deck. So the Rivers is just flowing with great food. It's great to sit out on the deck, especially this time of year. At nighttime, it was great. Cal came out, and he served us a wonderful dessert, you know, with the dry ice, and came out, which is always nice when the chef comes out at the end and explains to you about your we had great fish and wonderful, just a wonderful way to capture and end the evening. Great friends, great food, great ambiance, and so there you go. Some things to be thinking about that you could possibly do this weekend. And well, we had a couple calls come in too, Carl, and I think we need to address that.
Well, we had the
Well, Tina called. You got the 10%
yep.
discount, so we'll put that on the front desk for you, Tina. And always thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy that. Because the Shasta, not only that, again, let's go back to the Shasta Center. They are completely behind their veterans. They give veteran discounts all the time. It doesn't have to be a special day. They give you They give veterans discounts all the time, and they do some groovy things. Like on Thursday, they do, I think it's Thursdays where you get your car washed while you shop, which I've not taken advantage of yet, but I love that. And then Friday is Girls Night Out, where they've got a happy hour and there's discounts off. But this is a special other discount with your coupon, so use it and enjoy it. And again, shop local. We always say shop local. We're going to take a break here. We're going to be right back. We're going to get dive back into some of the stuff that has to do with being sticky and oily and all that other stuff, you know, that's going on that's affecting us globally.
The question is, where's the oil?
We'll be back after these messages.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott at 7:45 in the morning. Phone lines here are 605-4567. We're getting faxes. We're getting emails. Now, this portion of the show is brought to you by B&T Satellite right off Airport Road. Been serving customers since 1985. If you want Dish Network, you want great service, you want surround sound, you want theater in the home, then you go see Doug Tooley, veteran of the 82nd Airborne, and see him. Give him a call at 244-1988. Doug guarantees his work. He's there. He's there when you need him. He provides the very best in not only installation, but then follow-ups. You may, you know, sign up for some, you know, national company, but it's Doug is the one that's going to have to come in there and make sure it works. Why not start with him? That's Doug Tooley, B&T Satellite, off Airport Road, 244-1988. Todd Thompson. We had him on the show, X Games, riding in the motocross, one of six people in the world that was that won the honor to do that. And Todd is, when it's the X Games for those who have had injuries in their lives. Todd lost his leg below the knee years ago in a motorcycle accident and continued racing. But I understand today at 3:30 he's racing in the Los Angeles Coliseum. Or the big bucks for the win. So good luck to Todd. Now, let's ask that question. 60 million gallons of oil or more. And this is day, by the way, day 101 in this. They've got the oil well finally capped. There's been all types of other interesting things going along with the whole with the entire endeavor from the very beginning. We're not even going to address those. The question is that they've got all these skimmer ships, like 200 of them out there skimming. And in the last few days, they've picked up like maybe a gallon of oil, maybe a barrel, not much at all. And they're looking in from satellite photography shows that the slick has disappeared. So where is it? It's not on the beaches. Is it on the bottom? Some scientists say yes, there's going to be some that does sink to the bottom, and that can be a severe problem in the future. The rest of the scientists seem to believe that it's still in the water column. The oil's in the water column. And there are microbes that is destroying the oil. They are eating it, digesting it, and they are taking care of the oil that's in the water. These microbes are in every ocean. They do clean up oil like this because oil is constantly seeping up through the ocean floor. From, you know, just because of it, it's worked its way to the surface, a myriad of reasons. Anyway, these microbes are in every ocean, and they eat the oil. In the Caribbean, they're saying is that because it's a warmer ocean, there's more microbes. And also, they believe the dispersants that was put into the ocean to disperse the oil and to break it down just made it easier for the microbes. Bob?
One of the questions about that, of course, the world does have a, in my opinion, a highly self-correcting mechanism. Oil is, after all, something that's been there for all time, so it would make sense that mechanisms have evolved to deal with the oil that seeps out. And granted, this was a fairly large amount, but of course, the people who want to scream doom and gloom at the drop of a hat are probably going to be disappointed. And yes, it is still a severe problem, and BP should be held accountable, but it's not the end of the world as we know it, to quote the song. Same with carbon in the atmosphere, yes, it can be a problem, but when there's more carbon, the forests grow faster, which in turn suck up the carbon. So there are some corrective mechanisms that are built into the system, and that's always an interesting thing. Sometimes the evidence does not prove out the worst-case scenarios that are presented to us.
Well, you know, I was wrong. There's not 200 boats. There's 4,000 boats out there looking for oil. And it appears, though, that these microbes have taken on the oil and have won. But, you know, this is something, again, I find it interesting that with all the hoopla that was going on from the very beginning with this, why this wasn't mentioned, that nature could have a way of fixing this. When I say fixing it, taking care of it. It's a very interesting concept to see that microbes that are already there have already taken care of a lot of the problem. It's going to be interesting to see. To me, it's going to be very interesting to see what the end result of this is. Is this true, or did the oil just kind of settle on the bottom of the ocean and they just haven't found it yet? Carl Lindebach, Free Fire Radio. We come back, we're going to be discussing if marijuana makes people so sleepy and happy, why are people getting stabbed and shot over it? Carl Lindebach, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 1460. Back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott, 7:53 in the morning. Phone lines here, 605-4567. We're streaming on KCNR1460.com. Hey, tonight, Thursday night, Colt 45s. It's half-price beer Thursday. Bob's happy. We know where Bob's going to be tonight. Bob, I think it only goes through the fifth inning because they want you to be sober enough to at least find the parking lot at the end of this. It's going to be good. The Colt 45s have just been out there just whipping up on everybody. And then Fan Appreciation Day is tomorrow. They're going to be selling raffle tickets for A's tickets, signed balls and signed baseballs. I think it's from the Athletics, but I'll have to check there. So tonight, go on down there and get some of those great hot dogs and that half-price beer at the Colt 45 Stadium right down there across from Safeway. Now, the oil disappeared because it was eaten. And then you know what you see in the papers. Well, you know, somehow it's hard to trust that all the time. It looks like, you know, one of the things they say, well, you know, marijuana makes you mellow. You don't see them getting into fights like you do if they've been drinking and all this. Yeah, okay, that's true. I mean, okay, if that's what you believe, but if you're growing marijuana, your chances of having somebody be upset with you may grow, if you might say, if I could use that word. They had a gentleman booked into Shasta County Jail on suspicion of attempted murder and assault with a deadly weapon, a guy named David Lee Schroeder. It seems like the man that he attacked, Patrick Wright, suffered a wound in the abdomen during the fight, and they're saying it might have had to do with a fight over medical cannabis growing in an enterprise home. Police said they found over 100 marijuana plants growing in Wright's yard, and if the 100's the right number, they're checking to see if how many he can grow, because I think you're limited, but nobody really knows for sure because the laws switch as people, you know, as people look at them. They're saying is that she says there are only 30 plants. You know, there's a big difference between 30 and 100. I'm sure somebody can count these. Anyway, they started after they were calling each other thieves. The knife fight started. So I guess maybe we can assume that marijuana did have something to do with this fight on Main Street down there. You just gotta love it. And now people are, you know, starting to gear up for November about making marijuana legal. I just can't wait. You know, we think that one of the things that really miffs me is you get people in positions of power in Congress and the Senate, and they believe they can't be touched. They believe that they can do anything. They believe that what they do, because they give so much to the country, should be forgiven or should not, you know, nothing should be said about it. Like the governor of New York going down with his prostitutes. Oh, that's okay. Well, the governor of South Carolina, the senator from Idaho, the congressman from Texas, the governor, and probably most of the politicians from Illinois. All these people believe that they should be forgiven because they do so much for this country. And so what if they do little things like cheat on their taxes, lie about it under oath? What's so wrong about that? But it really looks like Rangel, Representative Charlie Rangel's congressional career may be in jeopardy. They're ready to publicly discuss charges of ethical misdeeds with Congressman Rangel. You know, this thing's range anywhere from having houses he doesn't report, over-reporting or under-reporting income, not reporting income, everything. All, you know, just a list of ethics violations. And it looks like he may be in trouble. And when you see that, you know, do you really want people to be in trouble? And the answer to that is yes. But why does it take 10 years? These things started coming out on Rangel at least 5 years ago. So for 5 years, he's been able to sit there and fatten up on the taxpayer's dollar. What happens to the day that say, hey, wait a minute, you've been, you know, there's this stuff going on. Let's pursue it. Let's be like an Orkin Terminator and go out after the rats. What's wrong with that? Why is it so? Why did they just relax and kind of take a step back from their peers? Is it because a lot of times their hands are dirty? Is that what it is, that you don't really want to know where all this is going to? That if you really took a good look at what goes on in Congress and the Senate, I mean, a real good look, that maybe Charlie wouldn't be the only one with his hand caught in the cookie jar? How many others are like this? How many others use their positions? How many others use their positions to further their own interest without a care of what it does to us? And I'm looking at headlines right now. We don't have enough time to talk about it. About, you know, the middle class tax hikes that would never happen. Lies. Lies. It is going to happen. Look at what's going on inside the laws they're passing. We're not going to raise taxes. No, okay, what are they going to be called? Fees? How can you not raise the taxes? Look what they wrote. The Congressional Budget Office is putting it out there. Now, you can say what you want, but the deficit is so huge that something's got to be done. And they're raising taxes on those people making less than $250,000 a year. So stand by. It's going to be happening. And if they don't do a lot fast, there's going to be even worse, because on 1 January, all the other tax cuts go away. They sunset. So this is a time you really need to pay attention to what's going on around you. Get involved, my friends. Now, a complete change. Our guest in the next hour, Paul Huser from the Redding Electric Utility. And we're going to be talking to Paul about what's going on with the utility, what's going on with rates, what's going on with biomass. Carl Lindebach, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460.
This is KCNR Shasta Redding.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's 8:05 in the morning. Carl and Linda Bott, good morning.
Good morning.
It's July 29th. Our phone line is 605-4567.
You're going to want to email us or call us, because our next guest is just a wealth of information, and he sits in a position that and runs a company that very much affects us. But before we go there, I want to tell you it's 68 degrees today. It's going to be a high of 96. The weather's always brought to you by Ensalmo Vineyards. Again, Friday night, tomorrow night, Rick Hill will be out there. If you want to make your reservations, do it now, because they get sold out. It's a fabulous night. Come and join us from 6 to 9, live music in the summer, Ensalmo Music Series. But this portion of the show is brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. Of course, Carl loves the cigars, and so and they're wonderful supporters of the veteran community. They have a meeting room that's free to the public. You can go and get some spectacular coffee and espresso drinks and buy your beans there. Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive, which is they have been our sponsors since day one, and we really are very much appreciate Joe and Shelley and their input into the community and supporting us that we can also support the community. And that is a wonderful segue into the community at large and the things that we have to deal with, meaning dealing with just daily electricity and power.
And the consternation that rises about them. Our guest is Paul Hooser, who heads up the Reading Electric Utility. So good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here.
You've always come on the show when we asked you to be on, and you've never ducked a question.
So you have sideslipped.
Yeah. You might have sideslipped a little bit, but you know, but you got right back into it. Can you give us a snapshot of where we are with REU?
Yes. As probably most people are aware, we had a pretty good hydro year this past year. Of course, you can have some false impressions from looking at Shasta. Shasta is part of the Central Valley Project, is the reservoir that is by far in the best shape. And a lot of times people locally, it's very natural to have a tendency to look at Shasta and say, wow, it filled up this year, so things must be great. We're actually expecting very near average deliveries in terms of hydro, which are a pretty significant driver for the cost structure of REU. About in an average year, about 22% of our power comes from hydro from the Central Valley Project. But if anybody's been out to Trinity Lake, that's kind of the other end of the spectrum. It's not nearly in as good a shape. Even though the two lakes are close together, the watersheds are close together. They are different watersheds, and they received pretty significantly different amounts of precipitation this year. And when I say pretty good hydro year, average wouldn't typically be characterized as pretty good, but considering where we came from, if you just remember back a little bit, Shasta was super low, and the entire Central Valley Project in terms of storage was low. So to go from that level to actually what we expect to be average deliveries this year is actually pretty good. Good news for our ratepayers. Yeah, we are significantly dependent on the weather in terms of how it drives cost for us.
Well, when you say good news for the ratepayers, the one I understand is our rates are supposed to go up 5% this year.
Well,
7%.
Well, we haven't set a percentage yet. We anticipate going to City Council towards the end of the year with a rate case. The primary driver, it's easy to lose sight of this, but the primary driver for our change in cost structure occurred, it was set in motion back in 2004. We used to have a contract with the Western Area Power Administration that gave Reading about 600 gigawatt hours a year of low-cost hydro energy. Now, to put that in perspective, our entire system usage is about 800 gigawatt hours a year right now. That contract expired, and now we get, in an average year, in round numbers, about 250 gigawatt hours a year. So the transition, it's a multi-year transition that's underway right now, is we have to replace that very low-cost hydro energy with more expensive energy. And no matter what it is, just like the Unit 6, the new power combined cycle gas plant that we're building at our power plant, nothing's as cheap as hydro. So whatever you replace it with is more expensive. And you kind of stack on top of that some state regulations that require us to purchase more renewable energy, which is significantly more expensive than even natural gas-fired generation. And it leads to a higher cost structure. And we're gradually transitioning there. It may not be well known, but we're drawing down reserves for multiple years as we, instead of one massive rate shock to customers as we transition out of that old contract and into a renewable mandated future, we're gradually doing that over time. And that we're still in that process now, and we'll probably take several years to get there.
Our guest is Paul Hooser, the director of Reading Electric Utility. We're going to take a break here. If you have questions for Paul, our phone lines here are 605-4567. When we come back, I want to talk about the drawdown on what we have there, what that means, and when we start talking about the percentages, that we're being forced to buy more green energy, the impact it's having on us. And then I want to get into something called biomass that seems to be raising its head, as it should, as far as not being counted as biomass. Carl Indebott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Attention.
Free Fire Radio, welcome back. Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. That's KCNR 1460 North State. Friends in Anderson, Cottonwood, of course, Redding, City of Shasta Lake. See all the way down to Corning. In fact, you get on there and listen to us. And we were here. We heard us up in the bay, up on Lake Shasta. And we're talking about Lake Shasta.
Currently 73 degrees if you're just tuning in. It's a lovely Thursday day. Again, 8:14 in the morning. Highs today will be around 96. The weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Our guest today is Paul Hooser, of course, director of REU. And we are we've been talking about biomass, or we wanted to in this segment talk about biomass. Could you just explain to us biomass?
I'd be happy to. Biomass currently in California, it meets what is proposed to be the renewable portfolio standard. Actually, there's legislation in the legislature right now that is being shaped and altered, and the anticipation is that the governor will probably sign some renewable energy legislation this session. But biomass is predominantly wood waste that is burned to produce electricity, and Redding Electric Utility is fortunate to be in a part of the state where there's ample opportunity to procure biomass. And in terms of other, you know, if you compare it to other forms of renewable energy, it's actually an economic form of generation for multiple reasons. If you compare it to solar or wind, obviously solar only produces during the daytime. Wind is very unpredictable when, you know, you don't know when the wind's going to blow, but biomass can be scheduled like regular generation. It's more of a base load. You know when it, you can produce it when you know you need it. And that's very valuable. And in terms of cost, it's, you know, it's not as economic as gas-fired generation, but in terms of a renewable portfolio mandate, so long as it is continued to be allowed or classified as renewable, it's a great option for us to meet that mandate in as cost-effective a manner as possible.
Unfortunately, you know, at the end of this, there's always this unfortunately. And the reason I, you know, got into this, and I, you know, and I called Paul about it, was I was looking at other cases and talking about on renewable energy. And I saw the state of Oregon is in a fist fight with the feds? They're in a fist fight with somebody because they are not allowing them to use biomass as a renewable asset. And what we're saying is that this is something that it can be replaced, and why shouldn't we be able to do it? Who's fighting? Who's fighting the states and the cities about this?
There are a number of environmental groups that do not like the idea of biomass being counted as a renewable energy source. And I think fundamentally they don't like to create an economic incentive to harvest trees. And there's multiple fronts. It's not just in terms of renewables, but we also have Assembly Bill 32 that was passed in 2006. That's basically the carbon reduction bill. The regulations for that are being promulgated now, but there's a debate on biomass as to whether it's carbon neutral. And I think the science, and we believe, it certainly is carbon neutral because as those trees grow, you capture that carbon, and what's released as you burn it, it's carbon neutral, as opposed to fossil fuels that have locked up carbon for thousands of years. But there are some environmental groups that also want to classify, they don't want biomass classified as carbon neutral, because this has an impact on cost. As we move forward with AB 32 implementation, there's going to be a carbon tax implemented through a cap and trade scheme, and the ability to use biomass and have that not counted against you in terms of carbon releases is very critical to the economics of whether or not utilities want to use biomass energy.
And this biomass, it can be waste products of lumber mills.
Yes.
Even though they're trying to shut down all the lumber mills, in the state, because they don't like them. And who is they? Who are the ones that are doing this? Are there main groups here, or is just like one or two people that know that they can keep jamming the system up?
There's some of that goes on, but there are actually organized environmental groups that fundamentally do not want to see biomass counted as renewable energy.
And the names of these groups?
I
don't mean to put you on the spot. I just...
Yeah, and I'd hate to mention any names because I'm typically not that familiar with the specific platforms of different environmental groups.
I know that I've asked environmental groups, what's the big one here? Sierra Club, about the destruction of the environment going on up in Hayfork. because of all the marijuana growing, and you cannot believe the answers I was getting out of them. Oh, well, that's somebody else's job, and then, okay, that, I called that person and said, well, you know, it sounds to me like a local problem. I said, wait a minute, they're destroying the environment. How come you guys aren't up there chaining yourselves to trees that they're clear-cutting? Well, it doesn't really fit into their idea of what, you know, killing the environment is. You know, so you can clear-cut trees, you can dump pesticides into the water, you can do anything you want as long as you can grow marijuana, yet you come into here about having jobs and being able to produce clean energy without a carbon footprint. Excuse me, you know, does the word hypocritical weigh heavy on your shoulders there?
Well, the thing you mentioned about jobs is a very important point. If you look at the lumber mill business now, as everybody imagines, it's pretty tough to be in the business given the housing market. But the biomass energy is a way of supplementing or improving the economics of lumber mills. They basically take this waste and you create more value for it. So it can keep mills more viable and keep people employed in the business where otherwise some mills may have to close given the economy we're in now.
You know, well, part of it is, I mean, you can clear out all the dead trees. You're talking about underbrush to clean out the forest. These are things that put people to work and can provide energy.
And I agree that with you, and ultimately it benefits the environment when we don't have that forest fire and those massive fuels that have built up there.
We have an email that came in. The email says, can you explain why REU rates will go up 60-80% over the next 4 years?
They're certainly not going to go up 60-80% over the next 4 years, but it gets back, they may not have heard that lead-in I gave, but it really gets back to that contract we had with the Western Area Power Administration that has been replaced with a new contract, and having to replace that significant amount of low-cost hydro energy with more expensive forms of energy like renewables. That's the driver for our rates.
And the renewables is being driven by the state legislature and the feds?
Yes. Right now there's an administrative 33% mandate that by 2020, 33% of the energy that we provide to our customers must be from renewables.
And this goes back, this was Arnold Schwarzenegger's grand imperial edict that we were going to be greener than anybody else, and now it's hammering us.
That is correct. The governor, through executive order, implemented this last year. Now legislation is going through the legislature to really codify it in legislation because, you know, as you have a new governor, that could change. But once you have legislation that dictates that mandate, and we fully expect that 33% mandate to be, maybe with some slight differences, but to be codified in legislation this session.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break, but I want to come back and talk about that because the impact on us and just on California and then the national level, they're talking cap and trade. I mean, you think it's bad now, it could get a lot worse. Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. Radio on KCNR 1460, Carl and Linda Bott. It's 8:25 in the morning, and this portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew.
Oh, wait a minute. I was waiting for the perfect lead-in song that is great for the subject we're talking about. Are we done? We killed it. That's all right. It was Journey's Lights.
Okay.
When the lights...
Hey, how about when the lights go off in Georgia? That could be another one here. If as the rates go up, the lights go off. Paul's not smiling as much
don't
as
be
he
so
was
negative.
Just a minute ago.
We're trying to make sure the lights don't go off.
Yes, exactly. Right. We're kind of trying to stay positive here.
Okay, we've talked about biomass. The fact is that it isn't that we believe it's an a renewable resource. We're getting fought by environmental groups who say that it's not because they really don't want to see anybody cut a tree for any reason. You know, even if it's getting ready to fall down and hit your house. That's just God's way. Well, yeah, right. So then we're talking about the reason our prices are way up, the reason that it's costing more for us to have electricity is the edict from the governor saying that we are going to be green. We have to get how much? 33%?
33% by 2020.
By 2020. So that means every year we're taking more and more from the green side, the renewable energy.
That's correct. There's some interim targets. There's, you know, there's a lesser target in 2015. There's probably the first target's going to be in 2013. So, yes, and it takes time to procure these resources. So, yeah, we're gradually ramping up.
And so what if there's not enough of these resources? I mean, which I don't see how there's going to be. I mean, the hydro, this is one of the best years we've had with the lake, and yet we're only medium. Well, I mean, it's an average, I should say.
Well, and this is counterintuitive, but I should mention that large hydro does not count as a renewable.
That's it. Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to bring up. I'm glad you did. Is that's not counted as renewable. So that counts against us. So if we got 90% of our power from hydro, it doesn't count. You'd have to go out someplace else.
That's correct. And it makes really no logical or scientific sense why large hydro doesn't count, because actually small hydro units with less than 30 megawatts do count, so then it's even more counterintuitive, you know, why small hydro count and large doesn't. It, politically, though, Southern California, where there's a lot of political influence and votes, they have almost no hydro. Northern part of the state, even PG&E is about 17% hydro, so if you allowed large hydro to count, you'd create this huge rate disparity where ultimately PG&E in the North State would have much lower rates than Southern California, and politically that's not going to happen.
You know, okay, now here's something then that just lit my fuse, because the Flatlanders vote to take our water. They make more money than we do. It's they who have caused this problem, and yet they're going to punish us because of their problems. That I really dislike that. That's what you've got legislators for. It's what you have the governor for, to kind of make things even out. But then again, he doesn't care. Only thing he cares about is being known as the green governor.
Well, yeah, I don't know that I disagree, but if political realities in the state is there, well, obviously the population base in Southern California, if you can't dictate something over their objections.
No, you can't. Yeah. Ever since they discovered that trees can't vote,
yeah,
we've been down. It's been going down the downslide there. Okay, so renewable, we have to use renewable. That's driving the price up. Hydro doesn't count, so that, again, drives the price up. We can't use biomass. That drives the price up.
Well, currently we can use biomass, and we're working very hard. There are some efforts to not allow us to use biomass, but we want to continue to protect that ability to use biomass.
And this is going to be court cases?
Well, actually, right now, as the legislation is being formed, it's Senate Bill 722 is the current vehicle, and it's being debated now. And it does allow biomass as a form of renewable. We want to make sure that remains the case.
So is that getting a lot of support?
Currently, we don't see a real threat to that being removed from the legislation, but we keep an eye on that kind of thing all the time.
Our guest is Paul Hooser. If you have questions or emails, do call and ask. That's what this show is all about Reading Electric Utility. And if you've got questions or concerns, do call Paul or Carl and I here at 605-4567, or email me, Linda, at kcnr1460.com. We're about ready to take a break.
You know, when we come back after the break, I want to talk about, Tank. That's starting to maybe raise its head again. I want to talk about that and rates and people that can't pay. Carl Lindebach, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl Lindebach on KCNR 1460 it's 8:35 in the morning, sorry. This portion of the show brought to you by B&T Satellite, right off Airport Road, the place with all those little satellites in front. Doug Tooley's the owner. Doug puts in great surround sound, puts in great home theater systems, Dish TV. He's the man to see. His phone number is 244-1988, right off Airport Road, down from Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley guarantees his work. Been in business since 1985. That's B&T Satellite off Airport Road.
Our guest this morning is Paul Hooser, who is, what is your official title?
I'm the electric director for the City of Reading's Electric Utility.
Okay. So, Director Paul Hooser of REU. We do have a question, an email that came in. How much will our electric rates go up over the next 4 or 5 years? And how will people who are struggling to pay their electric bills in this economy be able to cope?
Well, to take the second part first, City Council about a year ago, I guess June was a year ago, they did make some significant changes in terms of our low-income assistance, and we redirected what we call public benefits money. It's a law passed in 98 that requires us to collect 2.85% of rates and use it for certain purposes. One of those allowed purposes is low-income assistance. And our the electric utilities, since that time period, spending on low-income assistance has more than doubled. So, you know, that's designed to help. You know, obviously in an economy like this, there's almost limitless need for more assistance. Keep in mind that, you know, it's impossible to mitigate all these impacts that we've talked about in terms of rates. There's just no provision. The utility has to pay to either generate or procure the energy that we ultimately sell to our customers. So while we try to do what we can, kind of our overall strategy is to keep rates as low as we possibly can to benefit all customers, though we do have these low-income assistance programs as well.
You say there's a you have a reserve of $30 million?
Right now, our reserves are at about, unrestricted cash reserves are at about $32 million. We'll probably draw those down in this past fiscal year by about $4 million. And, you know, to a lot of people, to put it in perspective, the budget's about $140 million a year. $32 million can sound like a lot of reserves, but in the scheme of the budget, and when you're dealing with wholesale power markets and very large transactions, we now, because of the financial collapse, have to be rated by rating agencies. Reserves are very important, and actually drawing those down too low would have more negative consequences long term if we received a ratings downgrade from Fitch or Moody's. You know, in the old days, we didn't have to have those, but since the AIG collapse and the inability to buy bond insurance, now we have no choice but to participate in those financial markets in a way that we didn't have to in the past. Reserves become even more important, and there can be a temptation to kind of put off the pain short term when in the long term that would result in more pain. And drawing down reserves too far would be the case.
What's too far?
This number has actually changed, and this is my opinion. We make recommendations to City Council. While we're going down probably into the $20 million or even less range as we transition to our new cost structure, I'd like to see us get back above $30 million and stay there. And as the utility grows, that number has to go up. You know, as the scope of the organization increases, you want to, in percentage terms, kind of maintain that. But if you really look at the counterparties we deal with, you know, the Shells, the Constellation Energies, you have to have reserves to be able to participate in those markets.
Okay. The last year we got into, and you alluded to it, there was a community uprising. In fact, over people being kicked out of their houses because they had because their electricity was cut off. Now, I realize you don't do that. That's the city enforcement group.
Code enforcement.
Code enforcement, and that's headed up by...
It's Jim Hamilton's group, and I think he's been on your show.
Yeah, Jim's been on the show before, too. So when we talk about code enforcement, it's Jim Hamilton and his group that does it. It's not people calling you. The only thing you're doing is, hey, we're... It hasn't been paid. We tell code enforcement.
That's correct. We share shut-off information with another city department, and they act on it. That's literally our only involvement.
What's the percentage of it? Has the percentage gone up or down since last year?
Well, and I'm not really in touch with this because we're not involved with it, but I believe that it's gone down significantly. But, you know, I actually did not check with code enforcement before coming in today, so I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to quote any numbers.
Well, that's for people being told that they were evicted. But as far as you see, as customers, has been electricity been shut off in more this year than last year at this time?
Well, actually, surprisingly, no. And this has surprised me in this economy. But if you look at the changes City Council made more than a year ago, mm-hmm. late fee collections, as kind of a proxy for that, they are down significantly from, you know, and that's, I think, primarily a result. Well, I think it's two things. I think it's a result of the changes that City Council made to policies to make it, basically make RU policies more lenient in terms of late fees.
We'd like to think of it as user-friendly.
Yes, that is the case, but keep in mind that, you know, it's a zero-sum game. The people that don't pay their bill, that bill is ultimately paid by people who do. So, you know, it all depends on your perspective and where you're at. But, yes, it is more user-friendly, but the other thing, in my belief, is the media scrutiny from groups like yourself or the Record Searchlight, I think people have become more aware of the topic and more aware of late fees in general, and because of that are making better decisions in terms of avoiding those. So I think there's two issues there. So actually, even in this economy, we haven't seen, you know, in terms of late fees, we have lower late fee collections.
Well, you know, I think part of that is, and we have to take a break here, but part of it is that before, if you paid in the afternoon of the day it was due, it wasn't counted, and now the way you count it is different, and it really is easier. I mean, you can bring it in that day. You can even bring it in the following Monday if it's a weekend type thing, and your people are right there. They're just all over it. So
I agree. Some of the changes were very intuitive.
That change that you all made was to help the citizens, and they started feeling like the company may care about it. And I think that's a huge thing. Anyway, we have to take a break,
and when we come back, we've got phone calls, or we do have another line open, and I have another email to read. This is Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. This is KCNR 1460.
Join.
If you're just tuning in, this is KCNR 1460. Hello, Carla Linda Bott here. 76 degrees right now. It's going to be high today of 98. And our guest today is Paul Hooser, again, the director of the REU. We were talking at the break. I swear we should have a show just on the break conversations, because they're always lively and juicy, and then we come back and we forget, you know, we've already covered the topic. But one of the things that I do want to ask you is, with our electric bill personally, and I'm sure many of you that are listening are thinking about, okay, with the Reading electric rates increasing, how much that we're not getting, like a how much in the next year, 24 months in the next 24 months, how much is the electric bill going to go up?
Well, and I know you've talked about me dodging questions, but I hate to throw out an answer that's not correct. And really, the answer is we don't know. But it won't be zero. As we continue to transition to this new cost structure, we do need to increase rates. But, you know, we need to see the results. You know, 6 months of results from now on has a significant impact on what we recommend or ask the city council for. You know, so to throw out something now and kind of politicize it wouldn't do, you know, the process or our customers justice if it's not accurate.
It is going to go up.
Yeah, the rate increase, we will request a rate increase. It won't be zero. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Dan, you're on KCNR with Paul Hooser.
Hi, Mr. Hauser, is it?
Hooser.
Hooser. Hey, I just got done with the Northwest Line College. I paid over $10,000, and now I'm working through trying to get an apprenticeship. In my last interview with SMUD, and I was comparing your wages with Trinity and Shasta, and Trinity hired last year, and they're getting paid over, I don't know, $42 an hour. Shasta Lake is a little bit over $40 an hour, and I'm looking about coming back up north after I get my apprenticeship done, but how can I come back when your wages are in the mid-30s?
Well, you make a correct observation. Trinity Public Utility District and the City of Shasta Lake, both in terms of lineman wages, pay more than we pay in Reading. I can't repeal market forces. We do have to be competitive. We do like to attract quality linemen to the area, and we're going to try to do everything we can to accomplish that. But you make a correct observation. Currently, we pay significantly less than both of those entities, and also the Lassen Municipal Utility District, I believe, is a little bit north of $40 an hour now. It's something we recognize. The economy is very difficult, but we would like to be able to address that at some point in the future.
So it could possibly, in the next couple of years, be better? Because my apprenticeship would be about a 3 to 4 year apprenticeship. So would it be sooner, do you think, or later? Now you have that, I've been reading the paper about CalPERS, and how, what is it, they want, the city council wants the employees to pay 7%. Now, that's quite a big chunk of more money now, right, on the wages?
Well, I mean, you're getting into some pretty esoteric issues here that, are wrapped up in union negotiations. And of course, we will undertake at the proper time, but it's hard for me to predict when or if, you know, these different issues will be addressed.
Hey, Dan, are you from this area? Are you going?
I am.
Okay, so you're up in Redding right now, then, or in the surrounding area?
In the surrounding area.
Okay.
Yes.
See, and then you know then is that our economy with 18% unemployment in the economy is just getting hammered right now.
Right. There'd be, and I agree with you. Yeah. That's why I chose I didn't want to do college anymore, and I just wanted to have some type of background. That's why I paid $10,000 to get some type of work, and I can go anywhere to do that job, but I want to come back to North. But why would I come to Reading if I can't get a decent wage? You know, when Trinity and Shasta Lake are paying way more.
Well,
my roots are from Reading, and that's where I'd like to come back to.
Well, Shasta Lake's only up the road. I don't know if they're hiring. I know that, though, is that 35 bucks an hour is, you know, can start you off pretty well. Is that the starting pay? I'm just saying, is that in Reading, a job paying $35 an hour puts you probably in the top 10% of the wage earners in Reading.
Well, but through our training, like I've been doing our training, and they said that our job is the seventh most dangerous job in the world. When you're dealing with electricity, do you really put a wage on something, a 30-something dollar an hour on somebody's life?
Sure, because I've had my job, I put my life on the line for about, came out to like $7.32 an hour. But that's it was a different job then. But what I'm saying is that, you know, how much is your life worth? How much is somebody's life worth, like a policeman who crashes through a door to save somebody or a fireman? So you have an arbitrary figure there. And the only thing I said was $35 in Reading is pretty good. $35 in New York or San Francisco may not be as good.
So you're saying, though, then go work in Shasta Lake where you get paid 40, or go to Trinity and you get over 42.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I look at things like this as, if you like Reading and you like the people, if it's your community, that you take a job where you can, and as the economy improves, I think salaries will improve for everybody. Unfortunately, we are in a recession that like nobody's seen since the 20s. But Dan, thanks so much for your phone call. We got to take a break here. We're on a hard break. Thank you very much. Carl Endebott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Back down.
8:54, and you're listening to KCNR 1460. Going to be high today, near 96, currently 76 degrees. We have callers on the line. Our guest is Paul Hooser, who is the director of Reading Electricity, REU. Let's go to the phones. Good morning, George. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I just wondered, I've been in Reading all my life. And to hear somebody say you're getting $35 and $40 an hour, plus benefits, I can understand why our cities and counties and states and feds are going broke at wages like that, and then to take a lot of the work out of the private industry, there's no wonder we're going broke. We can't make it the way we're doing.
Well, George, the going wages, of course, have gone up, for everybody. And the fact is that paying $35 an hour for an entry-level lineman, I assume that's what it is, right, Paul?
Well, it's not entry level, because we don't accept apprentices.
Okay.
The previous speaker said he had a couple years. We only, given our size, it's hard for us to train people.
Okay.
So we hire fully trained linemen.
Okay.
We don't have apprentices.
So $35 bucks an hour. Others are paying $5 more, $6 more an hour. The bottom, what he was saying is, why would he want to come to Reading? Well, I look at the average wage is like $22,000 a year here in Reading, maybe $23,000. And $35 an hour plus overtime can push people up in the $80,000-$90,000 range. Even,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you may not. My question is how many do you lose? A year, and you may lose one or two, but I don't think you lose that many, though, do you, Paul?
Candidly, in this economy, because there's not a lot of growth in positions, even though there's not a surplus of linemen, I will say that. Even with those wage scales, which I know sound pretty good in this area, It is a demanding job that not a lot of people go into. I take a pragmatic approach to this. Unlike other general fund departments, wages are 16 to 17% of the budget, but they do have a very significant impact on the service we provide to our customers. And my view is we have to be somewhat competitive. When we do have those openings, we want to attract somebody good and bring them in here. And we don't want to lose our best employees to, say, a Shasta Lake or a Trinity, because that does impact the level of service that we have to our customers. And then, you know, I look at the entire budget pragmatically. I know this, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and it can be a very emotional issue, but that wage structure is factored into a much lower rate structure than PG&E now. And we do, you know, unlike other areas, we compete against the private sector. I just recently looked at PG&E's lineman wages, and they go up to $50 an hour. It was shocking to me. So.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, we need to have you back on because we didn't get into tank. We didn't get into the transmission lines. We didn't get into what's happening out there. And we didn't get into the how the Sierra Club and others are doing a waging war against electricity producers throughout the United States, but also in our state. So, Paul, can we ask you to come back here in a, you know, pretty soon so we can finish talking about this?
Be happy to.
Great. Okay. Paul Hooser has been our guest. You know, he's been very forthcoming. Like I said, there are a thousand other questions out there that we need to get into. But we got somebody on the line here. Terry.
Good morning, Terry. You have just a minute.
Hey, Linda. Hey, Carl. How are you?
We're great.
You got like about a minute.
I just want to let people know tonight at the corner of Hilltop and Dana Drive, we are going to have a rally in support of Arizona and the immigration law. And it's been pretty insane what's happened down there. I'm sure you saw Governor Brewer last night.
Yeah.
She's invited the president to come to Arizona to see everything firsthand. However, he said he was too busy. I guess being too busy means that there was a date night or that he's worried about the police acting stupidly.
Well, you know, he had Paul McCartney, he heard was in town.
There you go, buddy. So the whole thing is, you know, basically come out there with your flags, come out there with a sign between 4:30 and 5 o'clock corner of Hilltop and Dana. And, you know, it's about time. I think we've all had just about enough. Had enough, Carl?
Well, yeah, we've had enough. Okay, right, so that's tonight at the Hilltop and Dana.
Hilltop and Dana Drive.
Go out and protest what happened to the immigration law.
Absolutely.
Okay, Terry,
thanks
a lot.
Terry.
Thank you, too.
Paul Hooser,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Hey, our guest tomorrow is Orville Thomas.
Yeah.
We're saying goodbye to Orville.
Farewell.
He's leaving Channel 7. He's taking off. And Donnie Greenberg, who's starting the show on Sunday. We've got two new shows starting Sunday.
I'm going to be covering a bunch of other things that are going to be going on for the weekend.
Right.
And do email us and always know that we are open. This is your radio station, so we are open line all the time.
Anytime that you need to say something, you come here. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
This is KCNR Shasta Redding.